Hey there, welcome back for another episode of Talkin' Winter Ops. I'm Rick Nelson, and with me here is Scott Lucas, who's been helping with the behind-the-scenes work, and it's about time we gave you some introduction that you deserve. Hey, Scott.
Hey there, Rick. Thanks.
So many of you out there know that Scott made the transition from the Ohio DOT to the City of Columbus, but when it comes to our podcast here, it doesn't matter what agency you work for or where you call home. There's always stories out there to be told regarding extreme weather and how we respond.
Yep, I couldn't agree more than Rick. I said with the snow, it doesn't really know who's plowing it. It still falls the same way, whether it falls in the city or it falls on the state highways.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the circles that you run in, I mean, the conversations really tend to be the same, the same kinds of things that you're interested in, that you're struggling with, that you've got challenges for.
That's for sure.
So, Scott, you know, we've been talking to several folks about this crisis in workforce recruiting and retention. I guess you could call it a crisis. You know, we've always had issues with workforce recruiting and retention, but it just seems like since 2020, it's really become exacerbated.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. With COVID and everything else going on, a lot of folks went out of the workforce and trying to get people back in the workforce or working out in the field has been a really tough challenge.
Yeah, you know, Pasco, he talked about the silver tsunami. You know, it's like lots of folks are retiring. In fact, you yourself were in like one of those positions, right, where you could retire from the Ohio DOT and start a second career with the City of Columbus.
That's right. That's exactly what he did.
So, you know, there's a lot of folks leaving the workforce and not as many folks lining up to get in. So I think it's really an important conversation that we had with this four-part series about how some agencies are trying to overcome, try to work their way around this workforce dilemma.
Yeah, I think of all the things that happened with budgets being pretty static, the workforce, as you said, is and leaving the workforce from the silver tsunami of people leaving. But then a lot of the younger people don't want to really get into public works the same as they had in the past. So it's a different day for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. Now, I guess one of the interesting things, and I guess it was advantageous that you're there with the City of Columbus, is you reached out to your HR director there, Lauren Hunter. She's the HR director at the City Department of Public Service, and you all have sort of hit on a unique program to try to tap into a certain demographic that can help you with your recruiting needs. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, we have a demographic that comes from our Marysville Correctional Facility in around Marysville, Ohio, and it's our only ladies reformatory in the state. And they have a program where they're teaching a lot of the ladies there construction skills as well as gardening skills. And it just happened to be the skill sets that we hire here in the street maintenance section here of Department of Public Service. And the ladies come out of the program well-trained. They're very well vetted and also highly recommended. So we're very fortunate that we have a great relationship. Lauren has a great relationship with the correctional facility and the instructor there. And so when he does recommend an individual, that individual is really the cream of the crop. So we get the best applicants that come out of that program. It's really been nice.
Yeah. I at the Committee on Maintenance meeting, there were a couple of other folks that talked about second chance programs and the kinds of successes that they're seeing come out of it. And I think this is really something that maybe if you're out there struggling, trying to recruit individuals to join your winter maintenance program, this might be something you would want to explore.
Yeah, it's really been a successful program for us here at the City of Columbus.
Yeah, so on episode 94, we're going to be talking winter ops with your HR person there at the City of Columbus, Lauren Hunter. And Scott, I think you're going to join us in on the conversation as well.
That's true. Yep.
So this episode episode 94 of Talkin' Winter Ops is called Second Chances. And we'll get to it right after this. Many of you may remember PSYCOP, the Snow and Ice Cooperative Program, one of ASHTO's technical service programs. Well, we've been rebranded. And what that really means is a fancy way to say we've got a new name. It's the same program, but now we're the Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program. And with that new name, we're expanding our scope just a wee bit to bring the work we've already been doing in road weather management up side by side with the winter maintenance work we've been doing. Now, we've also renamed our podcast to Talkin' Winter Ops. The Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program and Talkin' Winter Ops exist because of the support from ASHTO's Maintenance Committee and the state DOTs out there who make a voluntary contribution every year to financially support our program. Scott and I want to give a special shout out to those states who support the Winter Weather Management TSP so we can help support you achieve your winter maintenance mission. And with that, let's get on with the podcast. So, Lauren, you're the human resource director there at the City of Columbus?
For public service, yes.
Oh, how does that work? Is there different?
Okay, so we have...
What's the lay of the land?
We have the City of Columbus as a whole. That's about 9,000 employees. And then we have public service. We're one of the larger departments. We have roughly 750 employees. So I'm only with public service, not with the rest of the city.
Okay, so it would be the analogy would be you're the HR director at the Department of Transportation then, right?
And that's within the whole state organization, yeah.
Within the whole organization. Yeah. So, Lauren, you mentioned you're a lawyer. What's your background?
Started out as a labor and employment attorney, practicing in the law firm, and realized I wasn't quite in the right place in the world. I really enjoyed it when my clients called me before they screwed things up. And that's really HR if HR is doing things right.
Right.
So I went back, picked up my master's in human resources, and I've now been doing HR for north of 20 years, and I'm still having a ball.
Oh, that's great. That's great. It was kind of unique when you mentioned that you had a background in the law. It's like, yeah, I don't see that very often. If there was anybody that you would want to have some background in the law, it would be your person that's running human resources, I would think.
We do a lot of legal stuff, yes.
What we've been talking about here for the last three episodes so far have been this idea of workforce recruiting and retention, and it's a huge issue. It seems like whenever we get together, the conversation always turns to workforce and retention. And so we've been looking at several different ways that agencies have been going about cracking this recruiting nut. And we shouldn't be ignoring any segment of that applicant pool because it's so tight. And I understand that you all have created a very unique program for trying to fill vacancies within your public works department.
That's correct.
What's been your approach?
We have created a partnership with the Marysville Women's Penitentiary. So these are ladies who have been convicted of felony level crimes throughout the state of Ohio. Within that particular location, there is both a vocational teacher and a horticulture teacher who do a tremendous amount of training. And they train these ladies in construction and horticulture, separate programs, including a whole bunch of different equipment training. So aerial lift, they'll do an OSHA 10, they'll do, backhoe? Now I'm blanking on the other ones. Oh, shoot.
But nevertheless, it's that sort of that whole vocational suite of things, right? And that's right there at their facility.
Yeah, it's all inside the fence, and so it happens as part of their regular day within the Marysville Penitentiary. It is a really good program. It's difficult to get in. There's only 20 spots per class, and they go through, both of the teachers run what they call a hell week beforehand as part of the process to even get into the program. So in the main center green of the prison, they'll carry, here's 30 cinder blocks. take it 100 yards down the way. Next lady, bring them all back. You know, buckets of sand, buckets of water, all this kind of stuff, making sure that they have not only the endurance and the strength, but also the will to do this. So they make sure the ladies want to participate, and then they get into the program, the top 20.
So that's just to get into the Voc Ed program?
Correct. And the horticulture as well. So there's usually probably 80 different ladies who are interested in doing the program because there's not a whole lot else to do inside. And so a lot of ladies are thinking, okay, this will give me maybe some skills and something to do. But the only the ones who actually show that they want it are actually going to get into the program. So it's a fairly sought after program. Additionally, then, you know, they have, it's a certified accredited course. I believe of Sinclair College, but I'm not 100% sure. So they're actually taking a true vocational course. It's 6 months long for each. And then once they get done, they come out and they are really nicely skilled in the types of equipment that we would need or that would translate easily to our operations.
So how did you find out about this? You know, it's kind of interesting. You know, you say it sort of happens behind the fence. How did the city of Columbus sort of figure out that there's this potential applicant pool there?
Sheer blind luck, frankly. I was a member of the National Association of Women in Construction. I was one of the board members, and we had gotten this random call from the fellow who turned out to be the vocation teacher, and he was looking for a place who would employ his ladies. And so he contacted the Women in Construction, the Columbus chapter. Nobody in the group knew what to do with it. And I said, I'll take it. I'll see what I can do with this. I'm the only HR person who was on the board. So I called him up, started to explore it. This was before COVID. Started to go down this path, and COVID put the kibosh on everything. So we finally got this rejuvenated and starting to roll again. And we had our first hire in July of 21. So a little over 2 years now.
So when I was with the Nevada DOT, we used to use inmate labor, you know, for, you know, herbicides and weeds and trash pickup and all kinds of things like this. Is this kind of a similar program or do they come to you?
Nothing close to it. We get them once they're actually released from prison. So they are on probation or on community control, but they have a certain level of freedom to be able to come on out. Some of them don't have probation afterwards, after they serve their time. So we set up a whole process working with our civil service. The city of Columbus does have a very robust civil service. So we figured out what entry-level positions that are not tested we'd be able to use to be able to get these ladies in the door. We do have them coming in.
Why is that
in.
Important?
Because for all of our tested positions, you would need to come on site to the city, to our civil service offices, and take a test in a very controlled type of an atmosphere. And if you're currently incarcerated in literally a different town, you're not going to be able to apply for any of those positions and test for them. And then the city's only able to pick people off of the eligibility list, those folks who have gone through the testing process and passed it. So we needed an entry-level position that's not tested. So we'd be able to hire, like probably what many of your other folks do, you know, you put up a job posting, you go through an interview process, and you can take whoever the best candidates are. That's our process for the entry-level as well. So once we identified the positions and identified the areas, street maintenance is one of the areas, one of the three areas that they go into for public service. I go into Marysville probably three times a year on recruiting visits, talk to the ladies. They know who I am by this point, pass out my recruiting materials. And when it gets up to coming close to their release, they're going to say, oh, I want to work for City of Columbus. I want to do street maintenance. Okay, so the vocational teacher will let me know. I then contact street maintenance and say, hey, I have Jane Doe who is interested in coming out to street maintenance. Would you like to set up an interview? Okay. So we do a WebEx interview of the ladies while they're still in Marysville. And then the division is going to have these thumbs up or thumbs down say, do they want this lady or not? Once we get that process done, we send them an application link, and the vocational teacher will help them apply. That gets them into our recruiting system.
Okay, so they're like doing an interview to see if there's a good fit before you go through the application process. Okay.
Yes. And then once I know that Jane Doe is going to come out 2 months from now, then as I have that a laborer position available, I will make sure to hold on to it. And we know that that one's earmarked for Jane Doe once she's able to get out, get her driver's license, and start work. So she knows before she ever walks out of prison, I have a job with City of Columbus. Here's what it's going to look like. And even have an offer letter to be able to go find an apartment and say, no, really, I'm going to have a job. I'm going to be able to pay my rent.
Okay. Now, Lauren, you keep mentioning your ladies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a women's only program, or are there men involved in this at all?
For the inmates right now, it's a women's only program because the Marysville location is a women only prison. And that's the only one that we currently have the partnership with. We've not had as much issue lately in terms of recruiting. We have talked about whether to expand it to the men's prisons. Several of the prisons in Ohio for men also have a CDL Class B program. So that could be a potential in the future if we start having some recruiting issues. But right now, we haven't felt the need for it. Additionally, this actually started out as a diversity program. Like probably many of your colleagues out there, it's a very male-dominated field for construction, for CDL drivers, et cetera. So this is a way, from a diversity perspective, to increase our number of women within the department and within the blue-collar ranks.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Lauren. In the previous episode with Sandy, she had mentioned that across the board, about 10% of the workforce in this traditionally male-dominated career, if you will, 10% are women, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yet, women make up 58% of the applicant pool. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really kind of telling. And it's like, you know, you sort of need, you shouldn't discount 58% of the applicant pool just because they're female, right?
Correct. So what started out as a diversity program to try to get more women into our ranks, and if you look at the difference between the applicant pool for outside labor, because it's going to be outside working on the roads, versus maybe a clerical job, there is a definite shift in the number of applicants who are male and female applying for those respective positions. We wanted to be able to increase the opportunities for women. I can tell you, being female growing up, well, not in my household so much because my dad was big on teaching me everything. But in many households, women, girls are geared towards, okay, you go take care of the other kids, go learn how to cook, go do the cleaning stuff. And my brother, you know, go mow the lawn, go shovel the snow. In my household, I was shoveling the snow. I was also mowing the lawn. My brother learned how to cook. We both know how, we did that before we ever graduated from high school. So it was a fairly egalitarian household that I grew up in, but I know that's not the case for many of my fellow females. So trying to get more women in.
It's those life skill activities, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you need to know how to change a tire and fix the toilet, you know, because you may have to do that sometimes.
And I have.
So, Scott, let me ask you a question. Since you're on the sort of receiving end of these applicants, how has that worked out for you there in the streets program?
It's actually worked out very well. I haven't really been with the city very long, but I've talked to a lot of my managers. And every one of them was talking very, very positive of all the applicants. And we have a lot of ladies who are really progressing very well. They take to the job like a duck to water. I mean, they do very well in that. And they're willing to advance, take training. We have an excellent training program that one of my managers runs here at the city. And they're very excited about going to that program and learning all they can learn. Because they have that entry level coming in as a laborer, but then once they stay here for a while, then they can go through our CDL class and earn their Class B CDL, and then work in equipment operator one, and then earn their Class A CDL. And after a couple of years of working as a equipment operator one, then they can apply to be an equipment operator two, get a position for them. So it's a nice progression for them. They seem to very much enjoy it. really haven't had any negative aspects of the program. It's been a very, very positive thing.
And they're fitting in good with the crews?
Fitting in very well with the crews, yeah. The ladies and guys that have worked with them, we have still have a diverse crew that way, work very well with them. I've heard compliments, like I said, from my other managers that said that sometimes they're some of the lead workers actually on the crew, trying to motivate everybody to keep going and keep up the pace and everything like that. So
well, that's great. Very, very good.
Yeah, it's definitely not just a for show kind of program. It's a very worthwhile program.
So I guess one of the things, you know, as we were talking, Scott, one of the things is I think when you're interviewing somebody and you've got a particular position, and it doesn't matter where they're coming from, mm-hmm. right? Where what background the applicant has.
Right.
There's always this interest to make sure that they're going to fit the program. They're going to fit the particular position.
Right.
It's kind of one of those intangible things that, you know, as you go through this interview process. The same sort of thing applies to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have positions that are like earmarked or designated for this particular program. And maybe that's a question for Lauren to answer from the HR point of view.
We do have a couple of positions that we target these ladies for, but labor and street maintenance, for example, you know, we may have one lady from Marysville in there and we may have five guys that we got off the street. We do occasionally get some other women off the street as well through regular recruiting matters. But they're in with the class with other laborers doing the same kind of stuff, going through the CDL program. I mean, this is truly just to be able to get them in the door, to be able to have hopefully a good career with us.
Okay. So you mentioned that you start this process, this hiring process while they're still there at Marysville. And one of the things that come up, one of the criticisms that we often hear is it takes so darn long to bring somebody on board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we're hiring regular positions, it's like it may take months to get through the hiring process, the application, the background, the yada yada, before you get there. It would seem to me that starting this process before they're actually released is sort of a benefit with respect to that duration.
Exactly. So if they were to apply after they got out and go through the full process, it'd probably be 2 or 3 months before we'd be able to get them on board. By having them interview, get accepted, apply for the position, etc., all we're waiting to do is once they get released, all of my positions do require a driver's license. Once they get the driver's license, the rest of it happens really pretty quickly. So the idea is, for the second chance approach, the sooner we can get them employed, the better off for everybody it is. We need the workers. They need a job. And idle hands make for devil's work. Let's make sure to keep them busy and something productive.
Right. Sort of shrink that downtime period.
Yeah. Yeah.
There.
Well, yeah, Rick, I just got one thing I just want to say about that, too. And it what I was very impressed with the ladies who came to us from Marysville is almost every one of them that we've had have been outstanding workers. Like I said before, we do go through a lot of folks we hire, and I don't know what the percentage is, but that people just don't make the transition well, and they have different issues and don't they find work elsewhere other than City of Columbus. But that's one thing I can honestly say about the ladies we get from the Marysville facility. They're with us, and they're there to work. It's a higher quality. We seem to be seeing a lot of that too. We interview the same way. We look, ask those questions about fit. And, you know, if you have this conflict with a coworker, they do something wrong, what would you do? And all those kind of questions too, to make sure they fit well. But the thing I'm very impressed with is that when we do hire a lot of these ladies, they're with us. It's not like a revolving door. And I think that's a very positive thing.
You know, speaking of retention, you've been in the program now for what, a couple of years?
Mm-hmm.
How's it panning out for you?
It's actually panned out really well. So for a labor or street maintenance type position, depending on where we are in the recruiting season, sometimes we can have as much as 25% be gone either through probationary removal or they job abandonment or whatever the case is for folks coming off the regular applicant stream. For the ladies that we have hired out of this program, I'll run through my stats because I'm kind of proud of these. We have hired 12 ladies since July of 21. We have had one job abandonment. The other 11 are still with us. Out of those 11, six have been promoted already. Two of them will be promoted just later on this month. So we'll be up to 8 out of 11 promotions. One lady has already been promoted twice. She was one of our early hires. The three remaining out of that 11 who haven't gotten promotions yet were hired respectively in May, July, and one just started this week. So it's a little too soon. But typically, for many of these positions, they're in their job for roughly 6 months to be able to learn what they need to learn, get through the CDL program, and meet the eligibility requirements for that next step up. So it has been a really good deal to come in at, we're often $20.33 starting for labor. So it's a nice livable wage, at least, to be able to start with. And then the promotional opportunity adds several dollars on top of that. And then there'll be plenty of overtime come snow.
Sure. Lauren, did you have to work around any personnel hiring rules or policies or things that may have been in place there at the City of Columbus when it comes to, hurdles or gates that an applicant might have to go through?
We partner with the vocational teacher and the horticulture teacher to get through some of those barriers. So ladies they may not be the most computer savvy. And so the teachers will help them with the application process. They'll help them with the WebEx interview. Once they get in here, if they're looking to be able to get through the promotion process and they need help applying, I'll go out and sit with them and help them apply and show them how to do that with our system. Offer resume assistance and all sorts of stuff to our internal people. And that's not just the ladies, but anybody else within public service as well. So we'll help them with some of the areas where they might be a little rusty or never even had the opportunity to learn. And a lot of that's usually a computer skill item. Mm-hmm. When it comes to other types of policies, we use a similar background approach, not quite the same with the Marysville ladies. Obviously, we know they have a record before they ever walk in the door. But we employ similar standards as what we do for anybody else as a second chance employer. So most of the ladies we've gotten have been in for drug offenses or other crimes that would support drug habit or drug dealing. We do have a few that do have some violent crime in their background. For those, they go through an extra process where I actually go back. I'm an attorney by original career. So for an individual who may have some violent crime in their history, I will go back and actually pull up the court cases. I'll pull up newspaper articles. I'll try to figure out what happened. And then I will do a special one-on-one with that individual and say, tell me your story. What happened? And things that I'm looking for would be not only an acknowledgement and ownership of what they did and how that was not the right thing to do. I'm looking for the learning process that they know better and they're not going to be doing it again. I'm looking for that kind of self-accountability and that maturity level to be able to have some reasonable belief that when I bring somebody who may have that on the record into my workplace, my other current employees are not going to be subject to risk because I don't want to do that.
Right.
And then we also do have, we won't, and this is regardless, we don't hire anybody who's got crimes against children. Be it child abuse, sexual molestation, anything like that. Street maintenance, as well as our refuse collection. In certain neighborhoods, kids are drawn to our operations. We have cool toys.
Yeah.
We've got great trucks. And every kid and adults alike all like to be able to go out and see what they do and how they do it. And it's just kind of cool to see it happen. And particularly in certain neighborhoods, we may be viewed as being safe. Because we're the city, we're a public entity, but we're not the police. And the police may not always have the best reputation in some of our neighborhoods. So if we have a kid who's lost, they have approached our crews, and this happens probably on average about once a year. Hey, I'm lost. Can you help me get back home? And our crews will help them be able to get back home. So that's why no crimes against children, because they're going to be drawn to our people and to our trucks. But that's going to be true regardless of whether you're coming from Marysville or whether you're coming off the street as part of a regular recruit.
Lauren, if you were to recommend this program to, to somebody who might be listening, what kind of advice would you want to give to them in considering looking at this particular applicant pool to fill vacancies within their organization?
Go with an open mind. Just because they may have a not great history doesn't mean that they don't have a potentially great future. Everybody can learn new tricks regardless of what their age is or where they're coming from or what their background may be. We have been particularly blessed because the programs that we're drawing from, the teachers are incredibly strong. They don't recommend somebody to us unless they're going to be good. So when one of the teachers tells me, hey, here's Jane Doe, she wants to do street maintenance, she's going to be a good one, I can take that to the bank. So I recognize my enthusiasm for this program is probably pretty specific to the program that we're drawing out of. And I don't know if all the other states may have programs like this and may not have the teachers who can create such a great applicant as what we're getting out of our program here.
So you could probably say a good part of your success is because of the partnership that you have with those folks
100%.
There in Marysville, right?
Yes. And the quality of the teachers and the dedication of the teachers. I know the vocational teacher has had to really fight against the powers that be. It's like, wait, you want to bring in a forklift? You want to bring – forklift is one of the pieces that they operate. You want to bring in a backhoe inside the prison and let prisoners run it. Are you – what are you smoking? You know, so
what could possibly go
what
wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? But he has been able to do it because the whole idea within Ohio, the full name of it is Ohio Department of Rehab and Corrections. And the rehab, part of that is making sure that whenever they do get released, they're rehabilitated and ready to go to work and become a regular productive member of society again. And these couple of teachers have really taken that to heart and argued vociferously to be able to get these types of opportunities and create the program that they have. And it's really robust. So seriously, it's not just a little bit of credit, but like a ton of credit needs to go to the teachers for this.
Scott, what kind of words of advice would you have to one of your fellow DOTs out there when it comes to a program like this?
I kind of echo what Lauren said, is definitely go into it with an open mind and trust the teachers in that. They work with these individuals all the time. They know them on a very personal basis. And the one thing that is nice about this is we're kind of really blessed in this fact that they really want to see this program work. So they're only going to suggest that the best of the best. I mean, we really are very fortunate. We get the cream of the crop. And I would suggest the same thing for anyone else who would like to do this, is that they work with the individuals and just stress that, you know, they really want to make this a successful program. And it kind of puts a feather in the cap of everyone, you know, involved, as long as it runs very well. So, that'd be my biggest thing, is to have a good partnership with them, trust the teachers and the people that are working with you, and have an open mind.
So the future of the program looks bright?
Very much so.
Lauren, I would like to, if it's okay with you, put your email out there in the show notes and encourage anybody that has an interest in learning about how you put the program together to give you a call or shoot you an email, if that's all right.
I'm A-okay with that. Thank you.
I just want to thank you guys for taking the time out to talk about this program. Again, I think it's super important on a whole lot of different levels, both as employers trying to find employees, but also the work that's being done to help these ladies that maybe have had a rough break and maybe they need a break, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you like this episode, share it with your colleagues. And while you're at it, click subscribe on your favorite podcast app. You can sign up to get all the Talkin' Winter Ops news direct to your email inbox by subscribing at subscribe.talkinwinterops.org. Sign up today so you can get all the news firsthand. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram too at TalkinWO. This podcast is possible because there are state departments of transportation across the nation that make a contribution to support the AASHTO Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, formerly known as SICOP. It's because of their support that Talkin' Winter Ops and all the other resources from the Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program are there to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. Until next time, thanks for tuning in and stay safe out there.